The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
With a combined age of 357, not the guests, this is Pythons, John Cleese, Terry Gilliam, Eric Idle, Terry Jones and Michael Palin, the comic legends that are Monty Python, have reunited for a series of shows at London's O2 this month. But don't worry if you can't make it across the water. A live stream of their final show will be beamed into cinemas nationwide this Sunday, the 20th of July at 7 p.m. Check local listings for details. And also on UK Gold as well, if you have satellite. Here to extol the virtues of the Grand Masters of British Comedy, our broadcaster and lifelong fan from the other station for the young people, Paddy McKenna, and from the improv group Ghost Train. Is that right? We have Owen McLaughlin, amongst other things, and also Lisa Garvey from, amongst other things, but also Callan's Kicks.
Yes.
Johnny's got a broom broom.
Love it.
I'm loving Callan's Kicks.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
It's on tonight.
It's on tonight
9:35, RTE One Television.
Get the plug in there.
No, I'm just auditioning for the voiceover. So how are you? Good morning to all of you this morning.
Morning.
Sir Paddy McKenna. How are you, Paddy McKenna?
Morning, Shay. How are you?
You have travelled across the water, especially to see Monty Python. Do tell.
Yeah, well, I have to say, obviously, it's a show that we all would know of and love. I mean, people would say, why Monty Python? Why have they come back 30 years, just over 30 years since their last show?
Do you know the answer to that question, why they've come back? Why have they come back, Paddy?
I would say it's the love of the theatre, just to be back on the stage again.
Or is it the love of the arrogant?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, they're unashamed. What I like about it is that they've come back, the five Pythons that are alive, and they've said, look it. It is about the money, and there was figures yesterday. They reckon they're going to make £2.2 million each just from these 10 shows. But like, even when you're at the show, like the merchandise, I mean, these guys are cashing in, because to get a T-shirt, £31 for a T-shirt, which is just pining for the fjords, which of course is from the Dead Parrot sketch, but that's a lot of wanga. And then I would always think, oh, I'll pick up a program or something when I'm over there. The only program you could get though was a hardback program, £61.
Good lord.
That's for the program.
But I'm thinking if you bought that in a few years, it might be worth some money on eBay.
Yeah, no, it is. And I can see, 51. Obviously. £51
It'll go down. So tell us, I think they're fairly blatant about the, it says stuff for sale or stuff to buy, I think, over the merchandise.
That's right.
Counter.
Right over it. So, I mean, they're not completely unashamed about it. But they say themselves, I mean, Terry Gilliam was saying, like, that he's really excited to be back because he's got a mortgage to pay and he needs to pay it. And of course, John Cleese as well, he got divorced in 2008.
Well, he's a numerous divorces, so he's got a lot.
Most recent, so he's paying a lot of alimony as well. So
it's an expensive hobby.
It is an expensive hobby.
He's married again.
Multiple marriages, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, they're all happy and unashamed to say this is about money. I have to say, I haven't seen the show and I've been a fan for a long, long time, that it's brilliant. It's a little bit long, if I was to just put one critique in there. It's 3.5 hours long.
How does it start?
So bring some cushions.
What's the first thing you see when you go in?
First of all, they start with, it's quite a big show. It's very West End, and of course it's in the O2 in London, so that is a big space to fill. So there's all singing, all dancing, dancing girls on the come, the boys wander on, and very early on they do the Four Yorkshiremen.
Okay, so you get straight
sketch.
Into it, in
so
other
straight
words.
In, and it's one of the strongest sketches and one of the ones that they do the best. And it's actually, what I thought about it was overall was beautifully ad-libbed.
Okay.
So you do sense that, you get a sense of that, yes, they're doing the old sketches, but maybe they put something new in as well.
Let's have a listen to the Four Yorkshiremen, the original.
Well, of course, we had it tough. We used to have to get them out of the shoebox in the middle of the night and lick the road clean with our tongues. We had to eat half a handful of freezing cold gravel, work 24 hours in that mill for 4 months every 6 years, and when we got home, our dad would slice us in two with a bread knife.
Right. I had to get up in the morning at 10 o'clock at night, half an hour before I went to bed, eat a lump of cold poison, work 29 hours a day down mill and pay mill owner for permission to come to work, and when we got home, our dad would kill us and dance about in our grave singing hallelujah.
That must have brought the house down, didn't it?
It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, that line from Eric Idle, you know, about having to get up at night, first thing in the morning, a half an hour before you go to bed. I mean,
let's hear your impression of it, because everybody has an impression of it.
I had to get up in the morning at 10 o'clock at night, half an hour before I went to bed. It's not bad. And actually, it gives you the timelessness, because the punchline, or they don't do punchlines or ending punchlines, but they say, you know, Palin says, you try and tell young people that today, and they won't believe you. So, I mean, there is that sense of the comedy still relevant.
Oh, and you're a lifelong fan. You used to hide under the covers and listen to the tapes.
That's how I escaped the realities of my life.
It's probably the album. The vinyl copy of it.
Yeah, I have it. Well, I had a cassette because I never had a record player in my bedroom, but I had a cassette of Live at the Hollywood Bowl.
You never had a record player?
there was obviously one in the living area. Yeah.
Luxury.
You were lucky.
But
what's interesting is that one, that the Four Yorkshiremen was one of my favourite sketches that was on the Live at the Hollywood Bowl tape that I went to sleep with every night. And interestingly, not a Monty Python sketch. It's from at last the 1948 show. So it was written by John Cleese and Graham Chapman and originally performed by them and I think Tim Brooke Taylor and Marty, what's his name?
Feldman.
Marty Feldman, yeah, exactly. So it's one of those sketches that they brought into their own live performances and they've done over the years, like they did it at the Hollywood Bowl.
Paddy McKenna's devastated, just to let you know.
It's two of them.
There's a few sketches like that, as you say, there are a few like that. But what is the enduring appeal of Monty Python for you? Is it the nostalgia? Is it... You know, if you went to see that live show, and I know you haven't seen it, Paddy's the only one who had enough money to go across because he's a very big star, you see. But
am I shell out for UK Gold?
And he got free tickets.
I paid for my tickets. I want to say that here now.
Would you go to see the show?
I'd take my dad to see the show for nostalgia because it's a big bonding thing between the two of us.
Okay.
Is Monty Python. And growing up, that was, you know, a major connection for us. But the enduring appeal of them for me is the fact, like, not many sketches actually have that long a half-life. You know, there's something that they tend to be of the moment. They tend to really reflect the times. And somehow... They transcended that a bit. Now, a lot of people around that time were transcending that a bit. It was a golden age, but they're the peak of it. You know, they are kind of the Beatles of 1960s comedy, although they started kind of at the end of the 60s. But
yeah,
they are that kind of benchmark that you can't...
That Austin Powers kind of era. Lisa, you're a Monty Python fan as well.
I am, indeed.
Did that influence you to get involved in comedy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would have had... There's some of the nostalgia as well that Owen's talking about, and my dad would have liked them as well. And but I love their slightly, just the slight surreal, absurd, off-centre, you know, kind of thing. And I just, like, even the musical side of it, I'm a Lumberjack, those guys, you know, like, they really, like, I really enjoy kind of those things. And I think that is what made me get into...
What's so appealing about the Lumberjack song?
Well, I think it's... when you put music into comedy, I think it just gives it an extra bit of something. You know, that kind of way. I love, you know, musical songs, musical parodies, anything like that. And any show that, like, Ghost Train Willie do or anything like that, we always, you know, be sure to have a song in there, you know, like, and I think it does lift the audience. And it's also very recognisable, you know, and it's very, you know, and it's funny. And I mean, I think I thought it was funny that he was wearing a bra in that song, you know. That is where my level is at, you know.
This is Radio 1. Owen, you're a complete Monty Python nerd. As I just realised, do you know where the idea for the Lumberjack song came from?
I absolutely do not. Thank you.
Michael Palin was talking to one of the cameramen whose job in a former life was as a lumberjack.
He cuts down trees, he skips and jumps, he likes to press wildflowers, he puts on women's clothing and hangs around in bars. Lumberjack and he's okay. He sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girly, just like my dear papa. I cut down trees, I wear high heels, suspenders and a bra. I wish I'd been a girly, just like my dear papa.
Oh, Rivers, and I thought you were so...
Was there other details about the cameraman than you?
Well, yes. His clothing. But now we know where the idea for Mrs. Brown came from. Paddy, you watched that sketch. As you went through the evening, what happened as you went through the first 3 hours of it?
At the first 3 hours? And then I'll talk about the last half an hour later. Well, I just think it's the music is obviously such an integral part of it. And Eric Idle, obviously, was one of the key guys in writing so much of the music. And during the show, like, his ability to... His voice is still actually I wouldn't say he ever had like an amazing voice. We'd say like Dylan. It was never an amazing voice, but he still has what he still has. He's the range is still there. They have a full orchestra, so you've got this massive sound. And the Lumberjack song, one of the things that I really loved about it was so many people were actually dressed up in the audience as Monty Python characters. So we had members of the Spanish Inquisition.
Brilliant.
We had Professor Gumby's. We had loads of Mounties, because we talk about the surrealism of Monty Python. You know, the fact that they can just chuck a load of Mounties into this sketch about lumberjacks. Yeah. Oh yeah, and lots of people dress as lumberjacks as well. And then you get the whole, because it's kind of got a lot of the music has that oompa beat where you feel like your arm is swinging. So the whole O2 is just pulsating to this music. It was a brilliant experience from that point of view, and definitely I would recommend.
These guys are in their 70s. How did they sustain being back on the stage for that long?
The thing about it was, because they intercut so much of the actual Flying Circus, the original show, with the actual live stuff, they were able to go and have a breather. And they're very good at pacing it so that if Cleese and Palin are doing the dead parrot sketch, well then the rest will kind of like be off, I suppose, having a breather, been hooked up to a, you know, sort of a, some sort of an oxygen. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they can do it. And I mean, you know, these guys, they're getting a lot of money to do it, but really they know this material inside and out. Such as the dead parrot sketch, obviously, if you see what they do.
You know, the UK Gold, who are showing it on TV, showing it live actually, so it's not edited, it's going to be quite interesting to see it live. They had a giant parrot built and and put it on the Thames, hung upside down on the Thames, and then delivered to the O2 on the day of the show. It's a useless fact.
No, I love it.
Number five.
And very Python-esque.
Oh, yeah. These guys, they had a fractious relationship through the years as well. Of course, obviously, Graham Chapman is passed on. That's why it's called Almost Live. Relationships through the years haven't been so good, have they?
Well, I don't know how strong they were to begin with. I mean, I think when it was initially brought together, interestingly, they were originally commissioned by David Attenborough, but
as a controller of BBC Two.
Yeah, he was controller of BBC Two at the time. But there was actually two different shows that were being commissioned. One was Cleese and Chapman, and then the other three lads, apart from Gilliam, we had been working on another show that was getting another series. And Cleese didn't want to work with Chapman on his own, because it was just so fractious. Now, kind of with hindsight, we know that Graham Chapman was probably insane.
Yeah.
But, well, not insane.
Yeah.
But
no, you can't
just
libel
very
the
difficult
dead
to work with.
But our producers just breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah. I mean, not actually insane, but he had an air of kind of madness about him.
Well, comic genius, as you guys would know as well. That's the first thing I thought about you as you came into the room.
Yeah, no, we're insane as well.
But they never really worked together as five people. They were always separate groups. There was always Cleese and Chapman and Palin and Jones, and then Eric Idle on his own, which apparently was how he liked it.
They were saying that, I was watching something about and Michael Palin was saying that, as you said, they weren't they didn't do a lot of things together bar record and it wasn't like
they
were a group of friends. They didn't socialise together, and Michael Palin said it was years before he actually realised that that Graham Chapman was a raging alcoholic, you know. And it was well known that, and he obviously came out afterwards and said that and everything, but they had no idea, you know. They just didn't spend that amount of time, you know, with each other or know each other.
Is that an ideal formula for an improv group as well, or for a comedy group? You guys are in Ghost Train. How many of you are in Ghost Train?
There's five of us all together.
Ooh.
Yeah.
One of you may be in trouble.
Uh-oh.
And it's, you know,
there's someone in Early House right now.
Well, an early something.
We know who he is.
Do you need that disparate group though as well? Do you need five different personalities?
Yeah.
And you absolutely you can't plan it from the beginning. I mean, it's funny, the writing partnerships that have worked out would not be the ones you predict. Like, the people that I would find I end up producing work with the most might be the person that I actually share the least with in terms of comedy tastes and that.
Yeah, I think that's what we find as well within our group. A lot of us don't have the same, me and Owen probably would have the closest, you know, and then we would have quite different tastes.
Yeah, there'd be people that come in and they just go, I have just seen the funniest movie in the world, you've got to go see it, and it's off the list, so never watch that.
Yeah. The recommendation, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, let's not watch that. Wink, go down.
Oh, amazing. And again, like, very true to the actual original. I actually think that line, that entire sketch was like word for word, was exactly the same. Nudge, yo, what's the gow? Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And
it was
Eric
in proper accents, though. Wait,
I mean,
not the Leitrim.
You told me to do the accents.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Leitrim Monty Python.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's close, but it's no cigar.
Travel.
Yeah, so your wife's travelled, and let's have a listen.
Let's have a listen to it.
Is your wife a goer, hey? Know what I mean? Nudge, 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 nudge. Know what I mean? Say no more. Know what I mean?
I beg your pardon?
Your wife, does she go? I don't mean, that's not, say no more.
Oh, she sometimes goes, yes.
I bet she does. I don't mean, that's not.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow you.
Oh, follow me. I like that, that's good. A nod's as good as a wink to a blind bat.
Are you trying to sell something?
Selling. Very good.
Whoa, so we're talking about nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Who's going to say something about that?
Right? And that's a like classic, the classic little kind of just two words. Any of those words, nudge, nudge, says the whole sketch to somebody when you say it. Wink, wink, says the whole sketch. You know, say no more. If you say it, everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. It's a great catchphrase.
I've read some of the reviews of the show, and Paddy, your review is just glowing, but some of them are not so glowing.
I mean, I can see why people will criticise it, but I think if you just let yourself go in the moment and allow you, like for me, and I suppose a lot of people, I just wanted to make sure that the box was ticked that I had seen Monty Python live, you know, before, like the show is called One Down, Five to Go. These are not young men. They're not going to be doing this forever, like, you know, so.
All these 70-year-olds listening outside have just texted in to say they are very young, Paddy.
They would say that themselves, though, like, you know, that this is maybe one more time around, like, you know, and that they want to do one more. I was interested when the two guys were talking about their improv of who's the John Cleese in the setup, because the thing about Cleese, you don't really get it in the live show, but none of them really liked Cleese, obviously, because his persona, obviously, being a comic genius, was that he was just incredibly arrogant, aloof, obviously. And he was the one that broke up the band when he turned to them all on the plane and said, I'm done. I've had enough. I'm finished. And that was that. The jig was up.
And I think he stuck with the movies and left the show. So the show was kind of pattering on without him, and he was still showing
he
up.
He felt they'd run out of ideas, basically. But he's happy to rejig
repeat,
them again.
Yeah, he didn't want to repeat himself. That's what he kept saying.
I don't have an argument about this.
Yeah.
I love it. I love
John Cleese. Look, I'm joking. No, but he was saying he didn't want to repeat stuff, which is obviously nobody wants to do that. And then I think they all kind of felt, some of them felt, there's no way we can do it without him. And then the others kind of felt like, I don't know, we're as good as it, you know, like
this. Garvey, you just missed my comedy cue for an argument sketch.
I'm so sorry.
You missed the, who likes the argument sketch? Nobody.
Yes.
Well, who doesn't like
it? Let's play it. Let's have a listen.
It's £1 for a 5-minute argument, but only £8 for a course of 10.
Well, I think it's probably best if I start with the one and see how it goes from there, okay?
Fine. I'll see who's free at the moment. Mr. Dubake is free, but he's a little bit conciliatory. Mm. Yes, sir. Try Mr. Barnard, room 12.
Thank you.
What do you want?
Well, I was told outside.
Don't give me that, you snotty-faced heap of parrot droppings!
What?
Shut your festering gob, you tit! Your type makes me puke! You vacuous, toffee-nosed, malodorous pervert!
Look! I came in here for an argument!
Oh, I'm sorry, this is abuse.
Oh.
It reminds me of the Rising Time production team.
It was very early in the morning for you guys.
Very early in the morning. 3.5 hours, Paddy. Would you recommend, obviously, it's maybe slightly too late to go and see it now live, but would you recommend people go to cinemas, tune into UK Gold and watch it?
Yeah, because obviously when you watch this show, and if you know the show, it has influenced absolutely everything. I mean, even just watching Après Match the other night, I was like, there wouldn't be an Après Match without Monty Python. And I'm not just picking on Après Match. I mean, so much comedy from the absurd, the surrealism. Yeah. They did it first. They did it before anybody else. I mean, these guys...
Fast show and things like that.
Completely.
You know, and, you know, that kind of... I always think that's sketchy. The nudge, nudge, wink, wink, wink. Just go back to that. Is that like the, ooh, suits you,
Do you find
sir,
yourself you know, using it in your comedy, though, as well? Not you, Paddy, because nothing funny about you. But...
just my face.
Have you heard the show? But your Ruth is hilarious, though.
Great, yeah.
Do you find elements of it creeping into your own comedy over the years? Do you think it's heavily influenced it?
It's almost to a ridiculous extent for if you're doing sketches, even when something isn't Monty Python-esque, you're doing it intentionally, you're avoiding it, you know?
Yeah.
If you're executing a sketch.
Next. Crucifixion.
Yes.
Good. Out of the door, line on the left, one cross each. Next. Crucifixion.
Yes.
Good. Out of the door, line on the left, one cross each. Next. Crucifixion?
No, freedom.
Mm-hmm. What?
Freedom for me. They said I hadn't done anything so I could go free and live on an island somewhere.
Oh, well, that's jolly good. Well, off you go then.
Nah, man, you put in your leg. It's crucifixion, really.
Oh, I see. Yeah, very good, very good. Well, out of the door.
Yeah, and out of the way, out the door, one cross each, line on the left.
Life of Brian. You have to love The Life of Brian. And the films. I mean, they show clips of the films, Paddy?
No. That's one thing that
I was disappointed.
Please tell me the Knights of St. Nee are going to make an appearance, but they never do. So that's a little fly.
So recommend to see it at the cinema just to tick a box, as well as if you're a fan. But really, you want to be a fan, do you think?
I think if you've never seen Python before, there will be moments where you'll be drifting going, I don't really know what's going on here. But if you're a fan, without question, and maybe like as they've done in the O2, consider maybe getting yourself a Spanish Inquisition garb or a lumberjack. I mean, suspenders and a bra is the way to
get into it. Suspenders and a bra, quite easy to get, I can tell you. It's very uncomfortable though. Owen and Lisa, you're both in Ghost Train. What's the next gig for you guys?
Ghost Train Willie, unfortunately, a name we hate. We are doing the...
I'm not allowed to say Willie on the air, so I didn't say Willie.
We are going to be in a festival, the Fringe Festival in September. We can't give any more details because we don't want to gazump
the
Fringe Festival launch.
Because you haven't
written
it yet.
No, writing sessions are going on great, Jay, actually.
Okay, and Lisa, we'll be able to see you tonight in Callan's Kicks. 9:35, RTE1 Television at Paddy.
Yeah, weekenders. I mean, Saturday and Sunday, 2 to 5 and 2 FM. Everything's really sound of RTE Radio 1 to power down between those hours. And just let us have the airwaves for free, all right?
Paddy McKenna, Owen McLaughlin and Lisa Garvey, thanks for coming in.